Corinthian I-90 Corps, and this is what we've also created a kind of a spin-off group, a Lessons Learned Working Group, that came out of our quarter planning council membership. We're sitting down with IDOT, we're sitting down with the councils of mayors, the counties, CMAP, PACE, RTA, to learn what we've done on I-90. I-90 has been a great corridor for us. We've done a lot of great things on I-90. We've been able to leverage a lot of money to deliver local transportation improvements. You know, there's a major transit corridor that's going along with I-90, a lot of new interchanges and access points. So what have we done right and what have we done wrong, and how can we improve this on Interstate 294, the tri-state corridor? So we've talked a lot about how we could leverage our collective resources to deliver more out of the project. So that's is one thing we've learned, how we've done it right and how we could improve along the I-90 corridor. So those are the guiding principles. Prioritization of issues. So here's some of the updates of what we've done. Over the last couple meetings, we've been talking to this the council membership, and again, they've been engaged and thoughtful and what they'd like to see on the corridor. Again, it's a wide variety of interests from, again, environmental, communities, business, economic development. But it's clear that these are basically the top priorities that they've called out, the top nine priorities, anything that they can think of. But the top thing that they thought they would like to see addressed on the corridor, which is nice to see, congestion and access, by far the top two. Right behind that, as I said, flooding and stormwater management and freight. So these are the top four priorities, not to diminish any of the other ones, technology, noise, aesthetics, economic development, or bike and pet. But those are the things they said we really need to focus on. If you're going to do something on this corridor, this is what we should really be focusing on. And it's not just what we, the tollway, will do. It's what the thought is, again, bringing in this group, different group of interest, is what other communities should be doing along the corridor as well to make sure that their plans and vision is compatible with what we do on this corridor, since it is so vital for us. So it's not just for us, it's for more of a regional vision. Interesting of how we came up with the prioritization, we had the different council members. Now we've had maybe anywhere between 25 to 30 different members show up at each meeting. At this, when we did the prioritization exercise, we had them put on different hats, if you will, put themselves in different shoes. They came in first and voting on what the top needs would be as themselves sitting in the seat. We had them kind of think about it as if you're a customer driving on the road, how would you look at them and prioritize things? How would you look at it as a board member? Again, making sure that they're considering what you would be looking at moving forward. Then also how the neighbor would look at the project, somebody who lives next to the road. So again, and using those different compilation of the scores, these still came up as the top priorities. So it's good in to see where they land in that.
Rocco, can I?
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
Surprised
please
economic so low. Economic, is that because that area is so well developed already?
I think
there's not a lot of open space or underutilized space.
Not necessarily. They figured if you relieve congestion and get us access, economic development will come.
Okay.
So that, Amy, that's pretty much how it worked out in that, right?
Yeah, it was very much sort of a reinforcement of if you can alleviate my congestion, I can be sure that my business will be able to.
Okay. Did you hear a lot, Rocco, about access being number two, but in that stretch, there seems to be a real lack of access on and off. I mean, you go from 95th Street to what, 75th?
Yes.
Where you can get off?
It's
basically an exit into UPS's and the UP's major yard.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to go almost to I-55 before you can get on and off. And that doesn't help economic development in that area as well.
So that's, again, with the meeting venues, all locationally challenged to talk about access. We've been talking to the community of Justice about opportunities for reintroducing that one. Yes, exactly. It's 79th Cork Avenue.
About 20 years ago.
Okay.
15?
93.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What was the meeting for? Was there?
There was a yeah.
We'll get back to
there was a school that was just across the street at school. The tollway had to buy the school. It's one of our potential access properties. We had to buy the school. The concern was that a vehicle could come off the road or a truck could come off the road and go into the school property. So at that point in time, I think it was actually legislated that we buy the school property, So we bought the school property, and the board at that point in time thought, let's not just buy the school property, let's close the rink as well. Within months after that, it was we heard yesterday 40% loss in business in that area, and this particular area feeds not just Justice, it's Justice, Bridgeview, where the Toyota Park is, Bedford Park, so you've got a lot of industry through there with very limited access. So that was one of the locations. No different up at North Avenue, at Lake Street. I mean, I should say North Lake, up at North and Lake, up in that location as well, where the former Entenmann's property used to be. It's a great location. Good luck getting there. Same thing with Oakbrook. So, again, these are the three locations we had. So, access, the discussion of access.
There's a hotel there, too.
I stay out of what they want to do. But access has definitely been a discussion. It's not just about and getting new access, local access, and we've got an interchange policy, and they understand that, too, and we've been working with a lot of these communities about the interchange policy, but it's improving the access that is there, too. 290, I-55, those are big interchanges. That really needs some work. The interface with 294 and 88, those are another big interchange. They have operational issues, congestion issues that are affecting communities. Elmhurst always says all the time that they see cars backing up into downtown Elmhurst because they're just trying to avoid the 290 interchange. So we're talking with the Department of Transportation and the locals and the county to say, what can we do to improve access?
With all those challenges, and given that this is the oldest stretch of tollway, predates the interstate system, I believe, are we allocating enough resources to something that's creating 20% of our revenue?
I guess I have a sort of a follow-up question on that. I note that we talk about reconstruction, and I presume that what that means is this road's old, and we're going to take it out all the way down to dirt, and mm-hmm. we're going to rebuild it. And we do that, what, every 50 or 60 years?
But this is 50.
Yeah, so this years. Is the first time, but this is obviously, this is a really big project. So are we looking at... You know, when we talk about big vision, are we talking about adding lanes? Are we talking about managed lanes? Are all options on the table for this? Which I realize we probably wouldn't be able to do with $1.7 billion, but I would certainly think if we're doing big vision and we're in a planning stage that there should be discussion about that. So I guess my question is there discussion about
that? Absolutely. So that's what we're doing through the master planning process. Again, being constrained, too, understanding you've got $1.7 billion. How do you work within $1.7? The plan right now, the $1.7 billion was based on taking everything that's there today, taking it down to the base, and putting it right back. Four lanes out there today, four lanes
planned
in the future.
Well.
What's that?
Paul? Mile-long bridge will bring it into the base and up and all that for $1.7 billion?
No, that's not fully included, but that is something that we definitely are interested in doing.
Right.
Like we said, we only do this once every 60 years, so we'd like to inconvenience these folks for the shortest amount of time possible and give them the best possible, you know, benefit when we're done so we can stay out of their way and they have the full use and operation of the road.
I mean, I know one of my questions at some point, I would presume everybody's question is going to be, you know, we have a budget of 1.7, but if we did want to add a lane and you know, what would it cost? What are our options, you know, truly? You know, I think we at least are going to need to know those. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if adding a lane is going to cost us $2 billion, I'd like to know that.
Right.
It's going to cost us $5 billion, I'd like to know that. Mm-hmm. It may have an impact on, I would think, $3
billion.
It costs
us $5 billion running out the door.
I think that's the kind of information that the board is going to need. We're going to want to know all of our options because, you know, we could reprioritize some of our money or look at it differently, but without information about that, we can't.
Right. That's exactly what the whole master plan, that's what we're looking at. We're looking at the wide range. We're not putting blinders on ourselves from a planning standpoint, but we want to be, again, fiscally responsible. So we're looking at tearing four lanes out, putting four lanes back. Four lanes with a wide inside shoulder. We call it lane zero, kind of like what we're doing on I-90. We're looking at five lanes with a wide inside lane. We're looking at managed lane opportunities, the possibility of maybe interfacing with I-55, who's building a managed lane through there, kind of getting back to Randy Blankenhorn's vision about connected networks and systems. So we're, from a planning perspective, we'll have all that information for you to go through. We're just getting started on that right now, but we're going to do the analysis from the traffic, standpoint, we're going to look at the revenue standpoint, we're going to look at the costs to bring some information to you to make some decisions about what it is that we can do. And we could still, again, knowing some of this, looking at what we need, prioritize what our interests might be. Build a bridge that's wide enough to give us that flexibility.
Well, is that all in the world of a $1.7 billion budget, or is it, this is what we need, because we're only going to do this at once every 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time. And, you know, it didn't take long for us to go from traffic flowing pretty well on Tri-State to now where we got gridlock again.
Right.
And if you get on it, which I do, in either direction, in the morning or rush hour, and sometimes even well after rush hour, you're backed up. And it's this important of an asset to the overall tollway. Are we limiting ourselves with saying, we got 1.7, now what can we do? Because I don't know, you talk to the engineers, but 1.7, adding a lane and taking down mile-long bridge and bringing everything down to the base, doesn't seem like enough revenue.
Are we constraining ourselves to 1.7?
We want to know what we can get. 1.7? But we also want to see what can be done. What's the ultimate solution out there, and how much would that cost?
Well,
we want to get both of those answers. What can you do for 1.7? And now, if you want to do more, what might that cost?
Well, I think that's what we want. We're going to want to know, what do we get for 1.7? What's it cost us to do a total reconstruction with a lane? You know, with all those options you talked about, you know, the wider shoulder. And basically, as Jim said, to have free-flowing traffic on that, because I think ultimately we would hope that we could do that.
And better access. I mean, that I can tell you, I'm sure you hear from all your towns, every town's probably squawking, we want access, so make sure not just adding lanes, but more access,
mm-hmm.
Because that's what drives, like you said, the economic development down the road and everything else.
At the end of the day, it's a once in our lifetime option. We don't want to be penny wise and pound foolish.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, the Move Illinois budget called for $1.7 billion for reconstruct in kind with some exclusions and some nuances. So the short answer is the budget as for Move Illinois, which is flexible and we know has some room to move funds, but it did call for $1.7 for reconstruct in kind. For this committee's knowledge, and Rocco, forgive me if you said this already, this planning process was not supposed to start until next year or maybe even the year after. But based on lessons learned from 90 and based on opportunities to do exactly what you said, look at it more holistically from a global view, we elected to move this planning process forward to allow us more time so that when we get the feedback from the board, from the corridor planning council, from all the stakeholders, we can present those options to you. So the short answer is yes. We're looking at it all. And that's why I believe this work is scheduled to begin from 2020 to 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And we're already planning it 5 years ahead of the planned construction time. And really, the planning wasn't supposed to start till next year. So we wanted to get going on this.
Well, we appreciate that. We think, obviously, I think we recognize how important this project is to the system as a whole and what a unique opportunity this is. And I think, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, the board has the opportunity, should they desire, to spend more on this project than 1.7. The question always is, when they make that decision, where will it come from? And they're going to have to address that also. But I think they want the knowledge to be able to consider that.
Yeah, and that's all the information that you're going to get over the next, really, year, Amy? When probably over the next year, realistically.
I think that's your next slide, isn't it, Rocco?
How old is the mile-long bridge? I know it's been added on, and we added lanes in the center 15, 20 years ago, but...
It was built in 58.
Yeah.
We added lanes to the inside in 72 and to the outside in 90-something.
Yes. So the support columns and everything go back to the... The
original,
correct.
And we've had a few rehab projects on there. I believe the Move Illinois program budget was based simply on redecking that structure. We would like to do more than that. We know that we would get more of a benefit out of it. But I think all the discussion is great because as far as engineering is concerned, the Central Tri is like the number one part of our system. And we recognize that it has the biggest impact on our customers because of the heavy load of traffic it carries on a daily basis. So we're happy that we have an opportunity to work on and focus on the most important part of our system.
It comes with challenges, there's no doubt about it. I mean, when you look at this, the mile long is, it's a storage yard for UPS if you go underneath it. They're warehousing. We have air rights, so there's billboards, there's utilities across the entire corridor. What we have to look at is, on all these things, what's the footprint impact? And again, that factors into the cost of what you do and how you manage and operate something. So, again, over the next year.
The second bridge at the curve, so when you get by O'Hare, you're elevated there for...
The Bensonville Road.
Same age?
Yeah, except we did do... like Rocco described, when we did our widenings on the tri-state, you know, there were, you know, rebuilding of the deck there. I remember I drove through that every day on my way to work. But, you know, that has a new superstructure. I don't know how old the substructure is or if we reconstructed it at that time in 95 or not. But that's another big structure on the system in that corridor. And we have Bowser O'Hare tying in there, mm-hmm. which is going to really change the whole characteristic of that area.
And I think getting a jump on it early, as the director was saying, really helps us coordinate with the Department of Transportation on these on the priorities for the corridor. 290. You think that's got to be a priority? I mean, that is a known point of congestion, but to do that, it's not just a tollway project. We're going to have to work with the other agencies to do that. And so if there's enough advance notice on what that might take or what it is, that it will help us. Again, those are the lessons learned from I-90. We came out of I-90 hard and fast, and there wasn't that much time for others to plan and prepare for us. That's what I think the appreciation now is, our desire is to make sure we can align our priorities and resources up with other resources. And, you know, we leveraged more than $100 million plus on the I-90 corridor from local communities and IDOT and others to do more than what we had planned. So that's the goal here as well.
How much? 100 million?
Oh, easily. Yeah. Yeah, for the interchange that we're building out there, I think we've got a new interchange at...
Roselle?
Well, we'll go from west to east, because that's the only way I can remember it. It's Irene, where Boone County and Belvedere bought some land, did the engineering work. We've got Huntley, which was five different agencies who partnered on that one. That was about a 70, 60-some-odd million-dollar project. 61, thanks, Joel. Then you go to Barrington Road. That's another $65 to $70 million project. We've got Roselle Road, which is Cook County and Schaumburg and the tollway. We've got Meacham Road. So there's six new interchanges through there, plus about almost $40 million of pace improvements along the corridor. So $100 million
is... Elmhurst Road.
What's that?
Modification Elmhurst
Road. Elmhurst Road, right. Is that what that was? Part of an Elgin O'Hare project. So on the I-90 corridor, those are... you know, six new interchanges or six big contributors. So, yeah, we were able to, again, getting out there in front, the quarter plan council that we did, the visioning process that we did with the locals to kind of get them excited about what it could be helped. So when you talk about the access issues, or doing the groundwork on this stuff right now.
Well, I know Huntley changed immensely there. It's amazing what that did. I mean, now the town's got to catch up to it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that
wasn't. Huntley would appreciate it if they didn't catch up too quick, I would think. but you're starting to see it hopping estates. I think Roselle is the perfect example. What's happening in Schaumburg at Roselle Road? It just used to be medieval times. Now you've got another 400 to 500 companies, Sunstar, that's already moved in through there. So that's.
I think Zerk chose to stay there because of all that. No question.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about the flooding prioritization. Obviously, when we put in impermeable surface, we've got to prepare a deal for flooding. But I guess I would only think that we would have a big cost for flooding if we put in more lanes. Or are we looking to help communities who have flooding problems along the way?
If we could do both, that's what we're trying to do. Is how can we do both? When we know what we have to do for all new impervious areas, any new pavement that we put down, we've got to handle that storage. But are there opportunities where we could collaborate with some local communities? We know we've already been told about some opportunities, some land opportunities along the corridor.
When you say land opportunities, what does that mean?
If somebody has land where they would say, hey, you know, we'd like to see this turned into some form of storage. Well, okay, if you have land and you're willing to give us the land, which we're, you know, we've started that, stir the pot a little bit, give us the land, we need some storage, can we maybe accommodate some bigger regional storage?
So you're talking about private businesses or communities?
Communities. We haven't heard anything from private businesses yet about that.
So, in other words, the communities have come forward and said, we'd like to partner with you.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not necessarily looking on us to pay for their stormwater issues.
I think they're looking, it might be, hey, if we give them, if they could give us the land, can we accommodate some of their needs as well?
So while you're making your detention needed, they can tie
into that.
So it's like a trade.
Right. They're looking at regional sites. Regional detention is something that we've done in the past. Let's not just try to detain water right here on project. What can we do upstream, downstream? So we've got some opportunities to look at, be a little bit more creative. We've had some, the members of the Corridor Planning Council, we've got the MWRD, who sits on the council. We've got the Cook County Forest Preserve, who's a major landowner, who typically don't touch their land, which fully appreciate that. But there's some maybe some opportunities with Cook County Forest Preserve on some remnant lands that they have. Could be a land swap type thing. You've got, we're working with DuPage County Stormwater Management Commission. Elmhurst has some flooding and drainage ideas all along Salt Creek. So, yeah, we've engaged the communities to talk about, okay, how can we help deliver what we need as a priority, but then by doing what we need, does that provide some assistance for their flooding as well?
Well, I got to say, the TOLI's been phenomenal the past few years. I've been mayor 20 years, but I'd say the last 5-10 years, TOLI's been phenomenal. Honestly, you guys meeting with us, having these meetings, it's such a different atmosphere and thought now when people say, oh, we'll deal with the TOLI. I know 15, 20 years ago, oh, no. Now, they can't wait to do it. And it's great. I'm glad to see the TOLI's doing it. It's a huge difference, the mindset of local governments with the TOLI than it was 15, 20 years ago. It really is. And I appreciate that because I've heard from a lot of mayors talk about that.
And it's because we are trying to figure out how to address their needs with ours.
In partner. It's a
partner.
And that's the key.
There's words in there, collaborative, financially viable. They understand that if we're doing the project, it's cheaper to do something when we're out there doing it. Let's do it together. Leverage our dollars and their dollars. And
well, things like the overpass, how we decorate them off to look different. I mean, what a difference that is. We never would have gotten that 15, 20 years ago. Now it's becoming common. And we look forward to it and stuff. So little things from that, like say, now flood management, everything, it's just great to see the partnership. It really is. And I can't thank TOLI enough for doing that.
I also wanted to ask about the priority for bicycle and pedestrian. Is that we use our right-of-way to put in a trail to connect to other trails? What is our priority for bicycles?
So let me explain some of this stuff because it was actually part of a discussion too with a recommendation yesterday or Tuesday. From a bike and ped standpoint, we already have a couple of overpasses, underpasses of the central tri-state right now, one up at Salt Creek and one down near Hinsdale, Western Springs area. But it's when we are looking at building, if we have to replace a bridge that's above us, can you build a bridge a little bit wider to accommodate a shelf for a bike, whether it be an on-street path or a sidewalk, whatever it might be.
We have a policy that when we do that, we always put a lane in for bikes or an area in for bikes.
We don't have a written policy on that, but that's what we've been doing. That was one of the other things that we thought about. Maybe we should start doing this as well. You know, IDOT adopts what they call complete streets policy, so when you're out there doing work, accommodate the needs of the bike and ped. So it's not overly laborious to do some of these things. It's just a matter of thinking about how the bridge that we have already today interface with that roadway. So to make sure that if you build a bridge, let people walk across it the right way. And, you know, if you're going to do transit out there, you need to make sure people get from one side to the other and make those connections. So that's what the discussion's been about, not a wholesale building new pedestrian bridges all over the place. It's a matter of how do you use the existing infrastructure, the bridges that we have today, to make sure that they can accommodate that.
Would just seem to me, though, as we move forward and we build bridges, that it would make sense that our policy would be, in the world in a simple way, that we add 2 or 3 feet or 5 feet or 6 feet, whatever you need, so that pedestrians or bicyclists or joggers or whatever it may be can use that. Because I would think as we build, I mean, obviously to retrofit them all would be unbelievably expensive, but if you create a policy as we go forward and do this over a 10, 20, 50, 60 year period, it would be a good policy. Maybe you might want to look at that.
Informally, we've been doing that, so it might just be nice to ratify it.
Right.
That way we will do this. So anyway, our Board of Planning Council work is really going to be wrapping up. Our last meeting of the council is going to be here in this room in January. We don't have the specific date set yet, but at that point in time, we'll get the final recommendations. So everything that we do with the recommendations from the Board of Planning Council is going to feed into our master planning consultant. They will adopt that, take some of the considerations, the things that you've talked about today, and as part of their thinking as they prepare the master planning process. But we continue our outreach with the partners. I think we have another tomorrow. We do a stakeholder meeting in Franklin Park. Next week, we're down in Chicago Ridge, continuing some more work. So anyway, we're just getting started. So when we're done with our quarter planning council, we'll come back to you sometime maybe spring of next year to give you some of the updates. Maybe we could even provide you some updates of where we are with the traffic analysis as far as the different options. Let's go.
Any questions for Rick?
All right.
Okay. Thanks, Rick.
That completes my report, Mr. Chairman.
Very well. Thank you. Alrighty, we have one item under engineering and planning, and that is the approval of our excess right-of-way and annexation policies. You all have copies of those in there. We've just had the presentation. May we have a motion to approve it as presented?
Motion approved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right, it's moved and second. Is there any discussion or questions or alterations at this point? Obviously, our approval will cause this to go to the full board for to be addressed and hopefully approved at our November meeting. So, hearing nothing, may we have a roll call on this minute, please?
Yes. Director Bain?
Aye.
Director Johnson?
Aye.
Director Sweeney?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
You have 4 yeas and 0 nays.
Very well. The Illinois Tollway Excess Right-of-Way and Annexation Policy is presented, is approved, and will be sent on to the full board for consideration. That's all that we have under engineering and planning. We will now proceed to unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business to come before the committee? All right, hearing nothing, we will proceed to new business. Is there any new business to come before the committee? All right, hearing nothing. We will proceed to adjournment. May we have a motion?
Motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right, it's moved and seconded. Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of adjourning, please state aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned, and I thank you.